So let's see. For those of you who were here yesterday, this could be seen as kind of a continuation, but if you weren't here yesterday, it's a hermetically sealed sort of talk, so you'll be fine too. But remember what we had. Oh, I like this. I don't have to stay in the. Remember what we had yesterday. We had what I claimed. Said that there were three basic objections to belief in God. The first one, anyone remember? Yeah, belief in God is not rational. The second one was what? Had something to do with science. Science what? Yeah, that science has shown that there's no God. So belief in God is irrational. Science has shown that there's no God. And then the third one is evil and suffering have shown that there's no God. And we're going to talk about that last one. Now, this last one's a little bit different. The first two, if you'll recall, and for those of you who weren't there, a lot of it was very intellectual. There were a lot of intellectual, philosophy came into it, science comes into it. This second or this third objection, like look at all the evil and suffering in the world. How could there be a good God? This one is way more emotional. Okay, this one isn't just an intellectual issue. In fact, it's primarily an emotional issue. The intellectual issues are, if not easy to deal with, they're not nearly as insurmountable as just the gut emotion and those sorts of issues that come with evil and suffering. Okay, in fact, there's actually a link. Charles Darwin, you guys know who he is, the evolution guy. Well, he used to, he before he, at the beginning of his career, he was a believer. By the end of his career, he was not. What's interesting is how he got there. One, I mean, there are, it's complicated. I mean, he's a human, so it's not just one easy answer. But one of the things that he mentioned, and this is very interesting, is that one of the reasons that he couldn't believe in God was it wasn't necessarily the evolution. It wasn't, okay, I can see how, I mean, biological organisms like you guys, I can see how you get here. I mean, it's evolution, God didn't do it. That wasn't necessarily his reasoning. It was this. When I look at, here's what he said. When I look at nature, I see it's red in tooth and claw. He says, look, there is no way that there can be a good, divine, all-knowing, all-powerful God who allows the sorts of things that you see in nature. I mean, even things like cats playing with mice, just for fun. He talks about one of the, it's a type of wasp. I don't know if you guys, this was an old movie. I think it was called Alien or Aliens or something like that, where bear with me. The alien would implant another alien inside a living human, and then that alien would come out creepy, right? Well, that's based on a wasp that really does do that, okay? What it does is it lays eggs in an animal and allows the eggs grow, the animal grows, the animal still lives, the eggs hatch, and then the babies eat the host, and that's it. And that's how, and he's like, and Darwin says, look, there is no way a good God would allow that. So I just can't see, but notice what he says, I can't see design in nature. Thank you. Now that's a weird argument. You can't see design. You can't see that there's a purpose behind it. No, it looks like, I mean, that's a very, very clever move. That's a clever, I mean, you think about what it would take to design something that would do that. It's not that there's no design. It's that it's diabolical design. Right? I mean, that's creepy. And so Darwin says something like this, or it seems like his reasoning is this. I mean, if you could call it good reasoning, I mean, he says, look, this is such a terrible thing. There's no design. That's a bad inference. What he should say is that that's such a terrible thing. If he thinks that a good God couldn't do that, he should say, wow, God isn't good. But certainly there's a powerful God and a clever God. Now, one of the things, just as an aside, I think we need to, when we look at just nature, there's a lot of rough things happen. And we have to remember that God is not safe. He's a good God. He loves his people, but he's not a safe God. In trying to put him in a box and say God could or couldn't or wouldn't do this or that, we're not always good at that. I mean, we can say that sometimes, especially when we have the Bible to go back to and say, look, I know God wouldn't do that because it says so. But a lot of times, trying to figure out what is appropriate for God to do, we're not good at judging that. And that gets us back to this problem of evil. Okay? But anyways, what the Darwin thing was to show you that there's more of an emotional response. That wasn't good reasoning on Darwin's part, and he was a smart guy. Okay? So let me run. There are really two kinds of problems of evil. And these are problems allegedly for the believer. The first one is called, and I hate to do this too, it's called the logical problem of evil. Don't worry about the word logical, and this isn't going to get super technical, but really all it says is there's a contradiction between a good, an all-good, all-loving, all-knowing, all-powerful God, and the existence of evil. Those two things cannot exist in reality. It violates the laws of logic. It's like saying that there's a square circle. Okay? It violates the law of non-contradiction. You can't have something that's both A and not A at the same time. So, this has been the classic argument against belief in God, that there's a logical contradiction between God on the one hand and evil on the other. Square, circle. Can't do it. Now, if this is right, this is a done deal for the unbeliever. This is a done deal. If you can show that there's a logical contradiction, we can all go home. You can't have one of those. Okay, so this can be a very powerful argument. If it's right, we're done. What's nice about this, though, it makes such a very strong claim that you only need a little bit of a maneuver to get out of it. And that's already been done. Let me tell you how. By the way, just to contrast and we'll get to this in just a moment. When it comes to the problem of this logical problem of evil, I'm going to contrast that with something called the probabilistic problem of evil, which is just saying, look, God and evil, they may not be logically contradictory, but it's pretty unlikely that they go together. I mean, it doesn't violate a law of logic, but yeah, it's probably, you know, like I can't swim the Atlantic. I mean, that doesn't violate a law of logic. You know, it's logically possible, and there's no laws that are violated, but it's pretty unlikely. Especially me. All right, so here's the thing. So going back to the logical problem, this has been solved, and here's how it has been solved. All you need to do is to find some possible situation in which God exists and evil exists, and it's not a contradiction. I mean, it doesn't even have to be the actual case. It doesn't have to be reality. It just has to be a possible situation. You say, see, look, no contradiction at all. And then we can go home. It ends up being more, and you can see how this is much more of a theoretical issue here. This almost does nothing when it comes to the emotional aspects behind, you know, when you see, wow, when you see some horrific thing on TV or something like that, and you just go, I don't even know what to say. Philosophy is not going to help you deal with that, usually. So this, again, is just this sort of intellectual argument. But here, let me tell you how one person, well, this is, it's generally considered now amongst philosophers that this logical problem of evil has been solved. It's no longer, I mean, at least consensus as much as philosophers will consent, okay? It's pretty much, okay, we're done with this one. And here's how it was solved. Imagine a scenario, and I think this might even be close to the truth. It might not just be this logically possible scenario, it might be an actual scenario. Okay, imagine this. Imagine that God wants to create beings that love him and that he loves back. All right? You can imagine that, of course. You believe it. Next, imagine that he doesn't want to force them to love him. Right? I mean, that would be strange to begin with. It's like, look, I don't care what you feel, I want you to love me. I mean, what is that? I mean, I don't even know what that means. There's got to be some level of freedom that to love in order to have that sort of relationship. Okay, so what God does is he creates beings that have this ability to choose him or not. Now, again, as Calvinists, I don't know if you guys know any Calvinists. Free will we can talk about later. But this, all that has to happen here is to find a logically possible case. It doesn't have to be factually accurate. So here's how it goes. If God is going to create free beings that aren't just, you know, zapped and robots and, you know, I love you. You know, that's, if he's going to do that, then he's got to create them so that they can choose. So he has to create them free to choose right or wrong. And by the very definition of that, he can't create them such that they'll always choose good. Just by the nature of freedom. If he created them such that, you know, I'm going to create them so that there's absolutely no possible way that they could ever choose anything wrong, that's not the kind of being that he would create who can choose. All right? So here it is. It's just a simple answer. That's the end of it. That's the solution. The solution to the logical problem of evil is just simply, look, here's a possible situation, logically possible, in which you can have God and evil. And it's simply by dint or by in virtue of the nature of freely choosing. Okay? So anyways, boom, that's done. That's the logical problem. The problem now, though, the problem now is more of this probabilistic problem of evil. And remember what this says. This says that, look, you have God and evil. It's not that these are a logical contradiction, but man, it'd be really unlikely to have a good God allow evil. So it's not like good God, evil equals square circle. It's more like good God, evil, I can fly to the moon with my hands. Okay? It's unlikely that I'm going to do that, but it doesn't violate a law of logic. So there's a couple of ways of responding to this. The first one, I like this move. The first one is this. Okay, imagine that it really is improbable. God, evil, pretty unlikely. What would follow from that? Well, what's interesting is not a whole lot. Imagine this scenario. Imagine a situation in which, let's say you know that 9 out of 10 Calvinists cannot swim. Okay? 9 out of 10 Calvinists cannot swim. Now, I say, I go looking for a Calvinist. Let's say I find one. What are the odds? Let's say Eric is one. What are the odds that Pastor Sauter can swim? Given what I know. Yeah, one, it's not very likely that he can swim. I mean, given what I know, for all that I know, it's pretty unlikely. I mean, it's not impossible. He could be one of those fortunate ones who can swim. Now, what if I added some new information? Okay, now I know that, so I know two things now. 9 out of 10 Calvinists can't swim, and Pastor Sauter is a lifeguard. Now I have two things. What do you think what's the likelihood now that he can swim? Well, it's a lot higher. Notice that this likelihood depends on what we know. It's like, for all we know, now, looks like it's pretty likely that he can swim. Eric, can you swim? Close enough. Survival. That's all we want. We just want you to survive. So what if we did this? What if we have, let's relate this to the problem of evil. Okay, let's say, and I'm not saying that this is true, but let's say that just the fact of evil and just the fact of God makes those two propositions can't go together, or I mean it's unlikely that they would go together. Okay? And that's all I know. Okay, let's assume that it's unlikely. Now, what if I added a bit of information to what I know? Namely, what if I had some other way of knowing that God existed? So I've got some other method by which I can know that God exists. So notice what happens. Yeah, if you just, all you took was evil, the existence of evil by itself, yeah, maybe it's unlikely that God exists. I'm not saying it is, but on our assumption. But now I've added this new bit of information, namely, that I have this other way of knowing that God exists. And isn't that the case? Remember, well, yesterday, and I'll real quickly, what we saw yesterday is that by and large, how we end up actually believing in God isn't by way of an argument, it's by way of the Spirit testifying in our hearts. Boom. There's something about us, we're hardwired in a certain way to look at creation and see God in it. Now that's damaged, you know, because of the fall. But it's being repaired now by the Holy Spirit. I mean, you think about your own life, why you believe in God. It's not usually because of an argument. They can help support, you know, and get rid of doubts and all of that, and they're really important in that sense. But just believing, Holy Spirit. So imagine this. You have this additional way of knowing that God exists, namely, His Spirit changing your heart. I mean, he makes you believe. That's just it, guys. I mean, that's really, I mean, you, and don't feel bad about that. Don't go, you know what, I just kind of find myself in my situation believing in God. I'm really, if I had to trace it back and figure out how I came to believe in God, it'd be kind of complicated. In fact, for some of us who grew up believing, you don't even remember a time when you didn't believe. So notice how this works. Given, maybe given the existence of evil, that makes belief in God unlikely. But not given the existence of evil and the fact that I know God exists, boom, all of a sudden, I don't have to worry. So it's very similar. We have to remember, given everything that we know, what makes it probable? Well, and if you already know that God exists and you've done, and it's been supernaturally, now I don't mean that you've seen a vision or anything like that. This supernatural process of you believing doesn't feel supernatural. But you know, you see the results, you just believe. Okay? Just the existence of evil doesn't make God improbable. But I don't even think that. I don't even think that even just given the existence of God, I mean, given the existence of evil, that even alone doesn't make God's existence improbable. So notice how we're kind of working through these. We're methodically working through these problems and dealing with them one at a time. That's how we should be reasoning. This is just philosophy, theology, a lot of those times, it's just reasoning in slow motion. Being very careful, making sure you're not stepping on landmines, not tripping over things, attacking the right things, disregarding the right things. And that's all we're doing. We got rid of the logical problem of evil. We're now doing the probabilistic problem of evil. We've said, you know what? Given even just the existence of evil, that doesn't necessarily make it improbable. But we can say more. Okay? Think about it a little bit differently. Why even think that it would be improbable even if you just knew that evil existed? How would that go? How would you support that? What would make you think that? Because here's how it's usually couched and usually explained. Look, if God's going to allow evil, these horrific things to happen, he had better have a good reason for doing so. That's usually the objection. He had better have a good reason for doing so. But he doesn't. I mean, and here's where it'd be helpful if you point to something really horrific and say, there's no reason for that at all. So, obviously, there's no God. Notice how this argument is moving along. What you have is the objector, the unbeliever is, or even the doubter, is saying this. God had better have a good reason for allowing all of this evil and suffering. But there's no reason that I can see. Therefore, God has no reason. Think about that. God had better have a good reason. I can't see any reason for allowing all this stuff. Therefore, God doesn't have a reason. Wow, that is... Why think that you're going to be the first person God tells the reason for allowing suffering? Why think that we're going to be the first to know? Why think that we would know at all? Think about... because imagine... Here's what we're doing. We have this all... The problem is an all-powerful, all-loving, all-knowing God. This is an impressive God. Infinitely powerful, infinitely knowledgeable, infinitely loving. Not just like really loving, I mean infinite. And there's no way someone like that would allow evil. Now, wait a second. You just said that he's all-knowing. So at the very least, God is infinitely wise and smart. He's infinitely wise, not just like mega mind, not just like has a big brain, not just really smart, infinite. It's not something that we can comprehend. Do you really think that you're going to plumb the depths of God's mind, look all through his mind, metaphorically speaking, look all through his mind and say, you know what? I've looked at everything, and there's no reason here. Why think that you could know whether or not God has a reason? I mean, come on. If the whole problem depends on God being such an amazing God, that there's no way you could know to begin with. So here's the thing. Why think that we should know? There's an illustration of this. Imagine that you're camping, okay? And what would you expect? So you have your tent, you set up your tent. You guys know what no-see-ums are? They're these little bugs that, well, you can't. They're really small. It's hard to see. But their bite is all out of proportion. I mean, they bite you and you feel it. So they're huge pain, you know, I mean, lots of pain, but you can't see them. That's why they're so dangerous. So you say, all right, what's the likelihood when I'm looking in my tent that I can see a no-see-um? So I quickly look in and I go, yeah, I don't see any, so I guess there aren't any. Then I go in and I say, okay, coast is clear. Ow. Should I really be surprised? I mean, they are called no-see-ums. I mean, so you'd really have to be able, you'd have, now what if I said, I better make sure there aren't any St. Bernards in there, in the tent. So I give it a look. Now, I would expect to see a St. Bernard. So if I don't see one, I can feel fairly confident that there isn't one. The no-see-um case, not so much. And if you think, well, I can see a no-see-um, think of a virus. Say, look, I see no bacteria in here. That you're not going to be able to see. So, and this is the same thing when it comes to God. Why think that if we imagine looking into God's reasons, that we're going to see reasons for his allowing evil? I don't see why we would think that. Okay, so now this isn't necessarily satisfying for someone who's suffering, or if you see something horrific on TV or whatever it is. This is just dealing with the intellectual issues, okay? The philosophy behind it, the attacks that you might have from an... Now, really where the rubber meets the road is when it comes to actual how you live this life and experience or see others experience great pain and suffering. And we've all seen it, even if not first. I mean, everyone's suffered, and you've at the very least seen things that you wish you had never seen. Things that you don't want to think about. Things that you would rather not ever repeat to yourself. I don't want to think about that incident ever again that I saw on TV. Whatever it is, it turns your stomach. So is there anything that we can say, you know, we've kind of dealt with the philosophy about it. Can we deal with it at a more practical level? You know, now some of this is still going to be how we think about things, but it can be, we want to find some sort of consolation, some sort of way to hold on in the meantime. Until we're on the other side. So are there any hints about how to handle or how to maybe put some salve on our wounds until the final days? Well, there may be a couple of ways, and it's going to depend on your personality, whether or not they take or whether or not they affect you at all. But think about this. Think about the story of Joseph. The story of, you know, Joseph goes through a lot of, he's a kind of a cocky kid, no doubt, at first. But he gets his brothers, send him into slavery. Then Potiphar puts him in, you know, he's in slavery. It's like he's twice removed from freedom. Goes through all the suffering. Ends up being, it works for good, right? The whole story ends up working for good. Well, a lot of times, and pastors pastors will attest to this, that a lot of times when they preach on this story, or if they talk to some of the, you know, to people, there are many people who can identify with that Joseph story. They've gone through serious struggles, and they see, you know what, I can kind of see something of, you know, how it happened to Joseph, kind of in my life too. That very, very terrible thing that happened to me, I now see years and years later that it really was at least a blessing to someone. It may not have been to me, but it may have been for some good. So there's at least like this shadow, this hint of, you know, and here's a real life story where God has taken someone, put him through the ringer, and then it ends up being for this great purpose. This isn't going to be a comfort necessarily to someone who, I mean, it may or may not, to someone who is actually struggling now. Again, these are still, it's a whole different issue when someone is actually going through the pain. But at least there's something we can, a hint, something we can see darkly. Well, here's another question that comes up when it comes to this whole evil thing, and this is this might be more of a theological issue, but it comes up a lot when people are, or even when you're just talking with ordinary unbelievers, and you may have had this doubt too, or this question, I should say. If God created Adam and Eve good, why would they have fallen? I mean, why would they have chosen? Okay, so let's say they're free to choose. You know, they, in some sense of the word that we can recognize, they have a kind of freedom to choose. You know, they could go here or they could go here. Whatever that is, whatever that choice is, they have that ability. We have choices all the time, right? And we choose good things, and we're very wicked. But what about Adam and Eve? It seems like, come on, they weren't created with any sort of tendency towards sin like we are. Well, it seemed like it'd be pretty easy for them to just choose the good. Where did this come from? What's the deal here? And if you say, well, it came from Satan, and okay, that just backs it up one, you know. Satan's a creature, right? He's created. Was he created good or not? We're getting into a lot of deep issues that we could just travel down these roads. I don't want to do that, but I want to give you at least a suggestion here. What if we did this? Think of it this way. Okay, going back to at the beginning, there's just God, the Trinity. There's this relationship between all three persons of the Trinity. So there's something fundamental about this relationship, about relationships generally. Now, what God does is he's going to be super gracious and create you guys so that you guys can have, you can enter into that relationship with the Trinity. That's huge. That's an amazing privilege. But in order to do that, you have to be ready to do that. You have to be a special kind of being or creature. You can't be bacteria. You've got to be like God in an important sense. You've got to be made in His image. Now, what exactly that means and how you flesh out, okay, well, image in what way? There are a lot of tricky matters there, but let's just say, look, we have to be like Him in some way. Now, just think about that alone. You have to be like God. Wow. That's just another way of saying you've got to be impressive in some sense. You need to be awesome. I mean, you have to be made as really impressive creatures. So God makes these impressive creatures. Maybe here's the problem. I mean, none of this, this is all speculation. You know, we don't really have, you know, a lot of this we're just left, God just says, look, you need to trust me on this. So this is all speculation. Maybe, though, because he had to create such impressive creatures, no matter what happens, these creatures were going to be impressed with themselves. Simply put, it's just like, look, here we are, we want to be number one. Pride, right? I want to be above God. I want to be the man. So maybe it's just inherent to this whole notion of being in communion with the Holy God, the Trinity, that creatures are going to be impressed with themselves, and that danger of turning to themselves and wanting themselves to be number one, that's just inherent in the process. And maybe God knew that. He knew any situation where he's going to have that, any situation where he's going to have that possibility of a relationship with him, we're going to have a fall. I don't know. I mean, this is just, again, like I said, this is just speculation. Maybe in order to have a relationship with humans, there would have to be a fall. There's something, it's called ophelix culpa. It means, oh, happy fall. This weird sense in which there's all this terrible stuff that has to happen in order to have a relationship and be in communion with God. Anyways, that's one way to think of it. I'm sure there are philosophical issues and theological issues with that. There are with just about any kind of solution to this problem of evil. And where's the origin of evil? That's really something that we have to say, you know, I don't know. But maybe this speculation that we just heard here, I don't know, maybe that can tide us over for a while. Another thing, too, when you're, you know, I mean, it may be this. Imagine someone suffering, and they're saying, look, it's not that I don't, the suffering and the horrific things that I see or I'm undergoing doesn't make me question God's existence. It makes me not trust him. It makes me scared of him. It concerns me. Well, here, think, and this is something that people go through all the time. This fear, this lack of trust. Well, maybe here's one way to think about this. And these are much more pastoral issues, relationship issues, human issues. But imagine this, and people have found comfort in this. Remember we said how important relationships are, and that goes back to the Trinity. You have somehow, and we have no idea how this happens, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, in a relationship with one another, somehow this oneness, the ultimate oneness. So this really tight relationship from all eternity. But then what happens when Jesus goes to the cross, not for his sins, but for ours? Something dramatic, and that's an understatement, happens on the cross. Somehow, in some sense, the Father turns his back on the Son. There's some sort of rift in the relationship. I mean, who knows what that's like? I mean, who knows what that means? Except it seems safe to say that it would be excruciating for all concerned. So this pain that Jesus undergoes when he's crucified isn't simply the physical pain. I don't know about you guys. This is something that I've always, when I was growing up, I thought this. Why is the crucifixion, you know, people talk about, you know, how terrible it was physically, and it really was. I mean, just a horrible, horrible death. But it's not necessarily unique in the history of human history. Right? I mean, people have undergone really terrible physical things like that, too. It's got to be more than that. And I'm not downplaying the physical side. I'm just saying, look, there's even more to it than that. So it's not just that bad. It's way worse. And the way worseness of it is that there's somehow this deep relationship was somehow severed or messed with, broken, torn, hurt, something damaged. At the very least, really painful. And if you've, and, you know, I mean, really, life is all about relationships. That's really where we ultimately find meaning. Obviously, it's in a mirror of our relationship with the Lord. But relationships are where we find meaning. And you know when those aren't going well, or they've even been severed, especially if you're close with someone, extremely painful. So, we look at, man, look at what Jesus did for us. I'm just about to go over there. Look what Jesus did for us. That worked really well. I'm just thinking, you know, that it's almost like I was shocked. It's like shock treatment. That is real. I'm going to have to think about that. That's a training for my dog. So again, maybe there are times when that can be something that we look to when we're suffering. It's like, man, Jesus is there with us in this sense. I mean, he is really, and in other senses, but he's really suffered on our behalf. He knows what it's like. He's not aloof, standing at a distance going, you know, I don't care about this. Or, wow, that's really tough, man. Sorry to hear you going through that. He knows exactly what that's like. And in spades. So, anyways, those are some of the considerations. We didn't get to some of the other stuff that there's a lot when it comes to the problem of evil. We haven't even talked about the atheist's problem of evil. So there's a problem of evil that we have, you know, having to figure out how to put God and evil to get, you know, how to reconcile that. Well, there's another problem, and this is one that the atheist had. And let me just briefly run through this. Imagine that atheism is true. Okay? Imagine that atheism, there's no God, there's no soul, there's no, you are just, and imagine that the scientific story that we have now is the real one. So really, we're composed of smaller particles all the way down to maybe quarks. You know, who knows if we're going to find so we're made up of quarks. What's this made up of? Quarks. Okay, so there you have it. There is nothing fundamentally different from you than this pew here, or a table, or a rock, or a piano, or whatever it is. I mean, your quarks function in a certain way, they do certain things, but they're still just, at the bottom level, particles. Inert, inanimate, just particles. If a rock falls on my foot, do I blame the rock? I mean, I might if I'm really in pain and I'm being irrational. Stupid rock. You know what I mean? But that's not real. I mean, the rock is not morally culpable. Right? There's no way in which that rock is morally culpable and needs to be reprimanded and disciplined or anything like that. There's no morality about it. Well, here's the thing. In an atheist's world, everything is fundamentally the same stuff as the rock. So fundamentally in the world, there's no morality. There can't be, there just can't be a morality without some sort of divine lawgiver or something in addition to quarks. Okay, so there's a different problem for the unbeliever, the one who thinks that we're just a bunch of quarks bouncing around in space and time. That's the issue. There isn't so much that, oh, I've got to figure out how to deal with this evil. What they have to figure out is, how do I call anything evil? What Hitler did. I can't say that was fundamentally wrong or right. It was just what some molecules did, like a rock falling, you know, tumbling down a hill. And that's it. That's all I can say. I can't say that any act of kindness is really a good thing. It's just what some molecules and quarks decided to do. Well, didn't decide to do. They just happened to do. Right? There was no decision there. You're just quarks. So notice that you have to give up a lot. And this is one of the things, I think this is one of the best arguments against atheism. I mean, it's not a knockdown argument. You can always wiggle out of it, but this is a good one. We have very strong intuitions about what is right and what is wrong. And when you look at horrific things, you know that if you believe anything at all, it's that certain things are right and certain things are wrong. In fact, you believe it so strongly it sometimes can make you sick. So it's deep. These are deep beliefs. You have to, that may be the deepest that we have. You have to give those up if there's no moral code. Those beliefs are nothing but the equivalent of a rock tumbling down a hill. Okay, so there's that other side too. Anyway, so what we've seen, this is a real big issue, and a lot of it isn't simply the intellectual issues, though there are all those too. It's a thorny issue when it comes to ideas and philosophy and all of that, but it's also, and even more so, a problem because it's just because we're dealing with pain. We're dealing with something that hits us not just in our minds. Okay, so we've kind of seen how it's more of that than it is an intellectual issue. So anyways, that's the problem of evil in a nutshell. You know, we've gone through this. You guys have no idea how far we've flown in this short little time. We have gone far. Okay? I think we're done. Hey, thank you very much.